You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays at noon on 98.7 ESPN.
It's Han Solo. No Bart Scott. Little vacation. Well-deserved, well-earned. And so you just got me. So if you got me, I need you. And that's why, again, the number's important. You get on the calls, we get and we talk together, and we have our conversation throughout this whole thing. And the week starts off with, oh boy, a whole lot to get to. So let's not waste any time. Let's get right to all the different headlines and conversations that we have to talk about today. Because while there's other things basketball-wise to get to, there certainly is a lot of baseball to discuss. What I think we need to really begin with, though, is to me a story that is not a surprise, but still something that once you see it, you're like, oh, wow, okay, that happened. And it was just a little while ago where Carmelo Anthony called it a career. Not that we didn't already know, right? Like he did not play at all this past season. There was some talk about him joining a couple of teams at the start of the year. It never came to fruition. One of them being the Knicks. I'll tell you the story behind that in a moment. But now he had made it official that he will retire at the age of 39 after 19 seasons, and he's had himself a Hall of Fame career. That part's indisputable. But I'm curious to hear from all of you here in New York is, where do you put him? Where is he when you have this conversation about all-time Knicks? All-time New York athletes, and what you think of him now. Because it's amazing how there was such a mercurial love-hate relationship between the fan base and Carmelo Anthony throughout his career as a Knick. But the last time we saw him at Madison Square Garden as a fan, he was A, demonstrative in rooting for the team. I mean, he was standing up, pumping his fist, doing all kinds of celebrations and everything else. But also a rousing ovation that he received from the fan base. So let's just begin starting with that. I'm just curious to see what y'all think about Carmelo Anthony now that he has done playing basketball and he steps away and he sent this message via social media.
I remember the days when I had nothing, just a ball on the court and a dream of something more. But basketball was my outlet. My purpose was strong, my communities, the cities I represented with pride, and the fans that supported me along the way. I am forever grateful for those people and places, because they made me Carmelo Anthony. But now the time has come for me to say goodbye to the court where I made my name, to the game that gave me purpose and pride. But this bittersweet goodbye to the NBA, I'm excited about what the future holds for me.
I'm curious to see what the future holds for him. I mean, there's many things that he could definitely get himself into, and we shall see where that goes. But Carmelo Anthony, just as a player, let's remember, he never reached the NBA Finals. And that part, of course, was frustrating for him. It was the pursuit of a championship was something that all great players want to have. But he did win a championship. Those who say, well, he really wasn't a winner, see, I push back on that. First of all, as a freshman at Syracuse, anybody, the proud Syracuse alums all know, one of the biggest moments in program history was what he did as a freshman in leading that team to a national championship with Jim Boeheim and company. So he has that national championship under his belt. He also, by the way, was one of the most prolific Olympic players in the history of USA basketball. I mean, I'm not overstating that. I mean, this guy, you remember, Olympics Mellow became a thing. Now, yes, he is somebody that was part of the team that lost, but he was also part of a team that was considered the redeem team. That, you know, he staying with it, with LeBron, of course, and Wade, and how they recommitted to all this stuff after what happened in Greece, I think changed everything for USA basketball. And he was such a big part of it, whether it was as a main piece or whether as a guy who was acknowledged, I can come off the bench. I mean, never forget 2012. He hit 10 three-pointers. And, like, just had that same look on his face. 3 gold medals, a national championship, 62 points at Madison Square Garden, top 9 scorer in NBA history. It's a great player. And so that's, again, why I go back. He's an all-time great. That's indisputable. He is somebody that is one of the best, one of the great college players, even though it was only 1 year. It's a new era. A great Olympic player. But what is he as a Knick in your mind? What will you remember Carmelo Anthony as when it comes to his history with the New York Knicks? Because, of course, he started his career with the Denver Nuggets. He was really his prime, his best years with the Denver Nuggets. He was at the edge of his prime when he came to the Knicks. He had a couple of really, he led the league in scoring. He was a great player as a Knick, but his best years were with Denver. But incredibly, he's more associated with the Knicks than I think Denver. Now, I know he doesn't have a great relationship with them, but you would think that that's going to have to, that eventually will come to pass. And they'll work that out. As I said this morning, I get up. The Denver Nuggets are where they are right now because of Carmelo Anthony. They traded him, and it was a big trade that many Knicks fans can't get over, but you got to. But the last piece of that trade, and really, and I'm going to say this, you got to believe me, the only piece of the trade that had any impact for the Nuggets going forward. That's a fact. The only piece of that trade that had any impact was the second of the two first rounders that they gave up. And that second first rounder turned into Jamal Murray. And Jamal Murray right now, for those who might not be watching the playoffs, is balling. I mean, he is balling. So that's the residual impact of the Carmelo Anthony trade. But as I mentioned, he was really good with the Denver Nuggets. But when he went to the Knicks, he changed the franchise. He gave it some juice, some sizzle. First, Amari Stoudemire brought it. Now, I'm with you. Amari brought, like, he was that first player that showed up in 2010 when they didn't get LeBron. And Amari came in to start that season and got this thing off the ground because the Knicks had been dormant for years. And they were, they spent 2 years cutting contracts, dropping salary, moving players, doing whatever it took so they can have the cap space to go get LeBron James. They thought they had a shot at it. I covered all that back in the day. I was a beat writer back then. I can tell you they were in the game. They were in the game. But they were never a front runner. Some people have suggested in the past that the Knicks at one point were a front runner. They really never were a front runner. The Knicks were, for LeBron, like this dream. Like a scenario that he liked to envision of him being the king of New York. It was a thought that sounded good, but the reality of it would have been, for him, was too big of a risk to take because the franchise wasn't anywhere near ready to win. They were going to rely on him so much. He already had that in Cleveland, didn't want to deal with it again. And obviously Miami just set itself up perfectly. Pat Riley does it again, but I'll tell you what, more on that in a moment. But just that set up, though, something interesting. The pursuit of LeBron made Amari interested in coming instead. And he did. And Amari had a great start to the year. But I can tell you this from conversations I've had with Carmelo. He watched Amari. He watched the summer and the hysteria around everybody just doing whatever it took to get LeBron. LeBron chose not to take this stage. Then he saw Amari take it, and he saw what Amari became. What do you have, 7 straight 30-point performances? He had the Knicks buzzing. He had the building lit, and it hadn't been lit like that in a long time. And he saw it. And he was like, I'm a piece of that. And I can tell you about a conversation I had with Carmelo. It probably was the year before? Yeah, it had to be the year before the decision. And we were in Denver. And so the rumors were always around about LeBron, New York. And I saw him at a morning shoot-around. He was walking out of the arena, and I just followed him out a little bit. I hated doing that. Like, when you're a beat writer, the worst thing is, like, you want to talk to a player, but the player clearly wants to get out of somewhere, and you literally have to, like, chase him. Like, not run, but I was a grown man. I wasn't chasing anybody. But it was more or less that like, I see him leaving. I got to catch up to him. He catches my eye. He knows I want to talk to him, and he's still walking. I'm like, yeah, he doesn't want to talk to me. But I had to. So I got his attention, and typical Carmelo Anthony, who, you know, as much as people say things about his personality, he was always, to me, I always found him to be somebody that was willing to talk to you. And so he paused, and then I just posed the question. Actually, it wasn't even a question. It was a statement. And I said, some people in New York, and it's funny because some people meaning me, but I said, some people in New York think that if their pursuit of LeBron doesn't come through, that you're next. And he was like, what, me? I was like, yeah, you'd be the next guy. What do you think of that? And he didn't shoot it down. Now, he had a free agency coming up. He could have opted out of his contract. So I knew that ahead of time. So I asked that question just to see how he'd react, and he had that little mellow smirk. And then he gave like a good standard answer. I got to look up the story and see exactly what he said to me. But it stayed there. And then it's a year later, and we're in Denver. And again, we're playing, the Knicks are playing the Nuggets, and we're in the, I guess it's pregame. And he's meeting with the media. And I asked him another question about New York. And he looked, he's like, you again. And I was like, yeah, me again. And I asked it again. All-star game, same thing. And by then, it was like hot and heavy. They were going to make the trade for him. So they make the trade, and they have the press conference at the Garden. If you remember, it was like the first game after all-star break. They have a press conference before the game. Chauncey Billups is there. He was part of the deal. And he's sitting there, and I had a question to ask, and I go, remember me? And he just laughed. So it's like those are the kinds of things that I think of when I think of the pursuit. And you realize that he was a guy that saw it and saw the potential of it and said, I want to be part of that. I want to do that. I want to be part of that. I want to feel that. I want to know what that's like. And so he wanted it. And that's the one thing that I think with all the different people and what they have to say about Carmelo Anthony, the one thing you can't say is that he avoided conflict. He never did. That he avoided taking a shot at something. He wanted this. And that says a lot more about a lot of other stars. They didn't want this. But what got dangerous is that while there was a good honeymoon, it didn't end well. It was poorly built around him, a lot of other reasons. But the one thing that I want to add is that how he exited here negatively impacted the franchise for a couple of years. It's taken the franchise a couple of years to recover from how it ended here in New York with Carmelo. And that's Phil Jackson, obviously, was a big part of that. Melo had something to do with it, too. That's fair. But there was a lot, like, it got real awkward real fast. It got ugly. And the next thing you knew, Melo was out. The Knicks were starless again. And no coincidence, they went back into being a dormant franchise for several years trying to chase another star. So Melo gave you an idea of what it would be like. You just didn't get close enough. 2013 came very close, but couldn't get there. But it's also the danger part of it is the whole league's watching how you treat these guys. And I think it is an amazing story that how it ends is him courtside at a playoff game all these years later with the crowd giving him an ovation and him openly cheering for the home team. So the love is still there. That part is something that I thought stayed with me too when I saw him in the building most recently. And whenever he talks about it, Melo's affinity, his affection for New York has never wavered. In fact, still lives here. In fact, his son now, who you referenced in the video, Kyan, is now going to play. He's playing high school ball here in New York. And that's who he's focusing on right now. But when he was asked all those years ago about what it's like, you know, playing in New York, he just said the Garden. They call it the Mecca for a reason. 800-919-3776 is the number. So, again, let's get some conversation on this. As Carmelo Anthony retires, you know, what is his legacy with the Knicks? We go to Lonnie in Harlem to start us off. Go ahead, Lonnie.
Good afternoon, Alan. How you doing?
Good.
First of all, big shout out to the company. I just wanted to call in first of all to give you, you know, keep you company because I know Bart is out for the week, so I'll probably, you know, try to call you every day this week. Just
appreciate
to keep
it.
Company. Bart, what up, though? What up, though, if you're listening, Bart? But yeah, Melo, to me, I just want to, you know, personally thank him because, like you said, in your little rundown just now, like, he was the only athlete or basketball player to ever really want to come to New York to be a Knick after the whole Amari thing. And just like you said, like, Amari had the city on fire. The garden was on fire. I mean, so, like, when Melo came, like, you know, it gave people like me, who's a Knicks fan, a little bit of hope coming from what we are used to as a, you know, being a Knicks fan or a Knicks arts organization. So, like, I just, like, I told Tom, I don't really know where he is on my all-time Knick list, but, like, I just want to, like, you know, personally give a shout-out to Melo and thank him because besides Brunson, he's the only person who, actually, you know, actually wanted to come here and put the city on his back and try to win us a ring. So, once again, just want to thank Melo. And Alan, like I said, I'll try to keep you busy this week. I'll keep you company this week. Once again, shout out to the company as well.
Appreciate you, Lonnie. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, when it comes to Melo's legacy, it's like it's that he and Amari. I mean, they'll always be connected. And again, that's why it was kind of cool to see them sitting together courtside at a playoff game as well, side by side. That's also a good visual. But it's like that's, you know, like it didn't result in a championship. But as I try to tell fans this all the time. Those are the best. I mean, 20 years of basketball, of Knicks basketball, those are the best 3 years. 11, 12, 13. Those are the best 3 years that you've had. And this year, these last 3 years, you have two playoffs in 3 years. But those were three in a row. Now, it was two first-round exits and a second-round exit. Yeah, I get it. But it was three straight years of winning. And there were a lot of moments. It was that feel of it's coming back. It's what happened after 2013 that, you know, again, we can discuss. But still, you can say all you want, but those are the best 3 years this franchise has had. Jose in Brooklyn. Jose.
Hey, good afternoon, Alan. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Definitely wanted to get into this topic because I'm a Knicks fan. And I'm not a it's kind of like I think it kind of falls into which age group that you fall into.
Fair.
Because as I talk to some of my other Knicks fan friends who are a little bit younger than me, they kind of look at it as kind of like how you look at it, which is, you know, throughout these last 20 years, those 3 years were pretty much the only shining light, yeah, you know, in competitive basketball. But, you know, for a person like me who's kind of remembers the end days of Jordan, I still remember the Patrick Ewing days and how much the city was on fire even then, year by year, and all of those playoff runs as a kid. So I kind of, you know, fall on the on a little bit on the other side with it. From my standpoint, he was definitely the second best Knick that I've ever seen, you know, up close live from a talent standpoint and from what he produced. It's just, to me, it's just the way how it ended and, you know, kind of like right, the dictating the terms of not wanting the other team to give too much when we kind of gave a lot for him. And it was,
yeah,
just like me as a Knicks
right,
fan, I'm a Knicks fan first at the end of the day. And I understand where Melo was coming from, but, you know, that kind of turned me a little off.
I tell you what, the trade part of things, Jose, the actual trade is what really, I think, worked against him, right? Like, I think more fans might have embraced him more if it had not been the amount of pieces that were given up in the trade. And like I said, if you review the trade, what part of the trade were you like, oh my God, we lost that guy. Oh my God, we lost that. The only one, like I said, is that one of the first round picks turned into Jamal Murray. That's it. Like, I'm telling you, I don't know what other impactful piece was just so devastating to lose. Manny in Flushing. Manny.
Hey, Holland, how you doing?
Good.
Good, man. Listen, man, you know, coming from a Knicks fan, you know, I appreciate what Melo did in those 7 years. Like you said, those first 3 years of Melo was the best times for a Knicks fan because that was the first time that, since I was a kid, the Knicks actually made the playoffs consistently and won 54 wins, and got to the conference semifinals. Because that was also the first time I remember watching you when you first started on MSG because of Melo.
You know what? That was the beginning for me. I mean, I covered him as a beat writer for 1 year, 2 years, actually, and then moved over to MSG, and I covered him as a broadcaster after that. So, you know, and I developed a, you know, like that kind of relationship with him and his group is just because that really got things started for me. So, yeah, he's the best. Like, I look at it like he's the best player I ever covered as a beat writer.
Wow.
Like, he's the best player because just talent-wise, he was just tremendous player. And it was there were nights you watch him, and there was like Matty, like we don't sit, the beat writers don't sit courtside anymore, but back then we did. Like we were on the baseline at the Garden, and just to sit there baseline and watch guys like him and LeBron and Kobe, like that was special to be that close to the court and watch guys like that cook. It was like you know, it was mind blowing. So there was just something a little just different about that. Compared to these days where you're just so far away from the core, you don't really hear the conversations. Like, I would just love hearing this, like, the stuff he would say to opponents. Like it just, like, there was something cool about being that close to the floor that we just don't get anymore. But, you know, like, I'm not going to deny it. You know, my affinity for Carmelo Anthony, the player, especially in his years with the Knicks, are based on relationship. And just from the very beginning, as I told you that story, the very first time I kind of broached the subject with him, chasing him out of the arena in Denver after a morning shoot-around, just to get his reaction to what he thought when I said, well, you know, if LeBron doesn't come, you know, you're next. And that smirk was all I needed to see. That told me, all right, he's in. It's all I needed to see.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays at noon on 98.7 ESPN.
We will get to audio files. We will get to the baseball teams having a great weekend. Mike Tannenbaum going to join us in 1 o'clock getting some football OTAs happening right now, the Jets, etc. Chris Candy said he's going to join us as well. CeCe on his Lakers. My. Is this the last time we're going to see LeBron James in the conference finals? Tonight could be the last time you see LeBron James in the conference finals. Tonight's a very important game for many, many reasons. I got your calls. I'm going to get back to them momentarily on the Carmelo stuff as Carmelo Anthony does retire from basketball. Makes it official. He retires. He put out a statement earlier this morning. And he retires as not only a top 10 scorer in NBA history, but a top 10 scorer in Knicks history as well. Seventh all time. But I want to ask this question, and we'll get back to the calls. So last night, the Heat just embarrassed the Celtics. Really, I should say that the Celtics embarrassed the Celtics. Let's be honest. And as I've been telling you, pay attention to what's going on in Philadelphia. because at the start of the season, you looked at teams that you're saying that the Knicks have to get better than. And two of those teams are Philadelphia and Boston. Philadelphia's not looking for a head coach, and they're not sure if they're keeping James Harden. Keep an eye on what's going on in Philly. But also, keep an eye on what's happening in Boston all of a sudden. They're down 3-0. They're not winning this series. History tells us they're done, not going to a finals. There's a lot of talk out of Boston now about whether or not Joe Mazzulla is the right guy to be the head coach. If you ask me, they made a mistake. And then there's this other question. Can they coexist with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown? Do they make major changes in Boston with either the head coach, with Jaylen Brown, or both? Keep an eye on what's going on in Boston. Suddenly, two teams in the East that were set up to be contenders, that were ahead of you, they're in turmoil right now. One false move, and they suddenly can tumble behind you. Keep an eye on what's happening in Philadelphia and Boston. Meanwhile, do you look now at the 6-game loss the Knicks suffered to the Heat in the second round? Do you look at it differently now that you see what they're doing to the Celtics? Which is, they haven't changed anything. They're playing their game. They're in your face, great defensively, and opportunistic three-point shooting. Against Milwaukee, they shot 45% from three. They were unconscious. They hit every open three. It was insane. But they played tough defense. They just got after it. They were physical. They were nasty. That's just how they play. They were bullies. Beat them in five. Their average points per game, their average point differential in that series against Milwaukee, the top seed, was 5.2 per game. In this series with Boston, doing the same thing, shooting over 40%, almost 48% from three in this series so far, three games. They have done all the other stuff too. Physical, nasty, getting into it with you. Just, this is how they play. Bully ball. Their point differential is plus 13 in this series. Plus 13 per game in this series. It's crazy. Now, yes, a big portion of that is because they won by, 28, 27, whatever it was they won by. They were up by 30 going into the fourth. But still, it's plus 13. In the series against the Knicks, which took six games and a tough six, they shot under they were low 30s, I believe, from three. I don't think they got under 30, but they were low 30s from three. They were not lighting it up from three. They felt like they made every big one, but they weren't lighting it up. It took them six games and a hard six to finally rid themselves of Jalen Brunson and company. And the point differential in that series was an average of plus 3.8 for Miami. 3.8. So I'm giving you 13. I mean, you have 5.2 and we have 3.8. So is that suddenly that second round series? Like, well, when you looked at the Knicks, you're like, oh, you know, you can't beat the Heat. You can't beat Miami. You're far away. Change your perspective at all? 800-919-3776 is the number. Let's get back to the calls, shall we? Let's go. Let's see. Just want to make sure we get all the people that have been waiting the longest. Ryan in Levittown. Get Ryan.
Hey, what's up, Han? I was listening to you talk about Melo, and I actually wanted to ask a question because one of my group chats, we were having a debate about whether or not the Knicks would retire Melo's number. And at first, you know, us as Knicks fans, we were like, yeah, you know, the Knicks should retire Melo's number. But one of my Celtics fans, friends who's a Celtics fan, said, you know, if KG only won one series, they wouldn't retire his number. So it started a debate, and I just wanted your thoughts on it.
Well, first of all, it's apples and oranges because the Celtics have won 17 championships. It's a little bit different. But it is worth saying this is, I believe, no, there's two. I think there's two players whose numbers are retired that didn't win a championship. And it's Dick McGuire and Patrick Ewing. I think everybody else's numbers were on championship teams, right? Clyde, Pearl, Willis, DeBuscher, Bradley, Dick Barnett, right? So they all won. So to McGuire and Ewing. Now, if you're putting up Carmelo, who is seventh in franchise scoring, do you think about Bernard King? You know, so there's a lot there to think about. I don't see it, but It could I mean, it's not saying it wouldn't happen, but I don't see it. But he's an all-time great. He's a Knick all-time great, but I just don't know about retiring numbers. They don't do that conveniently. They don't make it that easy around here. Like, Patrick, well-deserved. Like, Patrick deserved it, and he got it because he got to two finals. He was there for 15 years. You know, that's a much different story. But they have not done it since Patrick, and it'll be a very difficult – it's a debate, but I don't think that they'll go there. John in Queens, John. John.
Yeah. Hey, Alan.
How you doing?
I'm a 60-year-old Knick fan, so I've seen a lot.
Yep.
And here's my top three. Clyde is number one. Mm-hmm. When I was a kid, used to go to a bar on my block called Russ Brown. They were sports writers. Probably know them. Art Russ Jr. And yep. When Clyde's Rolls Royce would pull up and double park in front, all of us used to wait there until he would come out. And he just means so much to New York. Sure. He's number one. Number right. two is Patrick Ewing.
Yep.
And then number three is Carmelo. Watching Carmelo live was an experience, man. Mm-hmm. He was so impressive and fast and strong. It was just fun watching him.
As a scorer, I would probably put, I think, you know what, John, and it's great to share that. Thank you. As a score, pure score, he and Bernard King might have been the two most purest scores that the franchise has ever seen. You know, I obviously not old enough to have seen the guys from like the 50s and all that. I mean, Richie Guerin was a great scorer in the 50s and early 60s. He scored 50 points. I think he was the first guy to score 50 in a game for the Knicks. I never got to see him play. So I can't put him in that category. And the game was different then. But as far as like pure professional scores, there was nothing like watching Bernard King operate. And I got to see Carmelo like front row in his prime. There was nothing like him as a scorer. He put fear in people. Like that's how good of a scorer he was. Bobby in Long Island. Bobby.
Come on, third best Nick. I mean, like Bill Walton said, he was a selfish, self-centered player. Won one playoff series against an old Celtic team. He was jealous of Jerry Lynn's contract. Stoudemire confirmed that he was jealous. And what type of – how can you put him up there? There's no legacy with him. And he didn't play any defense. You know, I mean, he was obviously gifted offensively. But, you know, as a basketball team player, there is no way he's even in the top 10. He's got 73-5. That's the Knicks starters. Doing, I mean, maybe being a top 10, but I mean, come on, third, put a retired number for one playoff series, win against, you know, an old Celtic team. I know he was a gifted scorer, but that was basically it. I mean, you know, as far as a team success, it's none, zero.
Right. Bobby, like I said, there's a lot of people that would feel the opposite. So John, the previous caller, felt like he was one of the best he's seen. Bobby clearly disagrees. And, you know, you go with the team success thing, which I know a lot of players, a lot of fans do that with players. Anthony Secaucus, Anthony.
Hey, Alan, listen, Melo, for me, man, he's got to be top five, right? We're talking about the 70s teams and the 90s teams. But for me, I'm 31 years old, so – he brought me such joy and hope for 3 years of my life. Something that I could actually go and, you know, be around my friends, chop it up, and actually have, you know, a position in a conversation when we're talking about playoffs. So when it comes to the legacy, that's what I think about. Because, I mean, if it wasn't for those 3 years, it would have been until 2021 that we would have even smelled the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, like,
that's all
like
I got, man.
It's no, Anthony, I appreciate it. And what Anthony just gave us there was that perspective. Like, it's just the perspective of it, because for so many years they just weren't any good, and you didn't have a player like that you could have in the conversation as, well, this guy is one of the best scorers in the game. This guy is the league's leading scorer. You know, like you couldn't make those claims unless you had a guy like that on your team. You know, it's like the old story about it when the Dream Team in '90s, early '90s, '92. Were together and they were like hanging out, and it was like Bird, Magic, and like Michael were having this debate about championships or something like that, and Charles Barkley was there too, And Barkley chimed in, and they were all like, Chuck, you know nothing about this. You can't talk about this. Like, it's just – you. That's how you felt as a fan when everybody's talking about their players. And you're like, yeah, I got nothing. You know, you have nothing to offer to the conversation because your team sucks. But when you have a guy like Melo, when you had a guy like him, and that whole group, dude, I don't want to disclose, Amari, Melo, Tyson, like you had some guys that you knew that you felt like you had a chance to win. And sometimes, isn't that all you want as a fan? I just want to know that I can walk into a series and feel like we can win that series. And that's what 13 was all about. You can win that series. You know, 12, you kind of knew you were overwhelmed. Right, 11's different, man. 11 against the Celtics was winnable. You can ask the Celtics that. You can ask Chauncey. I've talked to Chauncey about this. That was winnable, but he got hurt in game one. Mari got hurt in game two. They had nothing. It was all Melo had to do it by himself. And go watch game two. Go watch that game two when he went for 40. He was unbelievable, like unbelievable in that game. They couldn't guard him. He did all he could, but obviously they just didn't have enough. I mean, that Celtics team was still very good. So it was there was some misfortune, but also, again, as I said, some team-building issues that they did not build it properly around them. Peter in Secaucus. Peter.
Hey, yeah, I just wanted to make a comment about people who are down on Julius Randle for blowing it late in the game. I'm a diehard Knicks fan, and I used to watch – Carmelo Anthony monopolized the ball, bring the last couple of seconds, take the last shot, and almost never hit it. So I just want everybody to cut Julius Randle a lot more slack. He hit a big game-winning shot this year, and I'm still proud of him.
Okay. Somehow looping Randle into this conversation, but, you know, okay. Derek in Harlem, what's up, D?
I'm so glad you brought up that Chauncey Billups, because I think everybody forget that. If Chauncey's healthy, we're winning that playoff series.
Man, that game, but you forget that game one in 2011. That game one was tight. Chauncey drove to the paint and popped his knee. Series ended right there. They were going toe to toe with that team.
Exactly. And if he doesn't pop his knee, we win that series. He comes back next year. Who knows what we do next year?
Never know. Right, right, right. Then they also don't get rid of him after that year, but they ended up getting rid of him with that amnesty clause. That's right.
Y'all got to look at that roster that Melo played with. Like, man, no disrespect to anybody on that team, but he wasn't playing with scores. Yeah, y'all would give y'all big toe right now for half of what Melo was back then on this team right now for somebody who to score like that.
Oh, my God.
So, let's chill on that. I know y'all did. But, you know, I called for two different reasons because you were talking about how the Knicks in the second round was looking like it was going to be the toughest for the Heat until they, you know, they get them boys in Denver because AD, you know, off to the days, he's getting swept. Remember, we talked about that last week, him playing good game three. He's going to have a bad game four tonight, so they get swept. But let me ask you this. Boston, this is what, their fourth year in the conference finals or something like that? They don't really got a power forward. I don't know, maybe you get a call like, hey, listen, you need a power forward, we need a wing, you might need something to switch it up. I mean, I'm just saying.
What are you trying to do? Derek, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to suggest trading Julius Randle for Jaylen Brown? Is that what you're trying to do?
Listen, those two guys, they're a little oil and water. They're not flowing. They're not mixing. And, you know, a guy who plays a different position, you got Grant Williams and what's up? They started Grant Williams and White the other day at you the are, floor. I'm just saying.
Derek, went right.
Allen.
Yeah.
After the Celtics get swept, I'm going to call and I'm going to tell y'all why y'all should stop talking about firing Tibbs and why we need to keep him. So after they get swept, I'm going to call the next day and I'm going to let y'all know why.
You're a rare one. You're a rare one. I'll tell you what.
Agree with me.
I'll tell you what. Hey, by the way, if the Knicks fire Tibbs, Boston might be the first team that calls. Boston might be the first team that calls. Just it out there. All right, thank you, Derek. Yeah, I mean, look at the coaches that are available right now. And Boston's going to continue with that guy? You're crazy.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays at noon on 98.7 ESPN.
So did you see this? The Stanley Cup, which you know they have, that thing travels all over the world. And during this time, during the playoffs, they always bring the cup all over different places and they just get it, you know, the different photo ops that they get. Well, the NBA smartened up and they started doing that with the Larry O'Brien trophy. And they started having the Larry O'Brien trophy, the LOB, just show up in different places. And wouldn't you know it, there's a video out now that I just retweeted at Alan Hart on Twitter. And it's called When Larry Met Stanley. And apparently, so it's the Larry O'Brien and the Stanley Cup together. And where do you think they're just jet-setting around? Right here in New York City. Is that so 21st century? You know, the power couple just comes to just jet-set around New York. No plans to stay. Just coming to, like, show their face and just be seen. You know, Met Gala kind of thing. You know, be seen in all the spots. But it's, you guys going to stay here? Nah. Where do you think they're going? Yeah, South Florida. Weather's better. And both teams have a chance to win it. Imagine that. South Florida. Miami Heat, one win away from the NBA Finals. And the Florida Panthers, already up 2-0 in their series, could go to the Stanley Cup Finals. Just thought it was kind of interesting, though, that you would have these two trophies and the one city they decide to put them in and have their little photo op together is New York. Of course. Let me just take a moment. Because that's, you know, I mean, come on. 1994, they could have both been together. That could have been us. Remember what Bart said? It could have been us. Should have been us. Watch this video. You'll get that same vibe. 800-919-3776 is the number. Let's go to Will in East Orange. What's up, Will?
How you doing today? I wanted to call and give my opinion on Carmelo. Everybody's always dogging Carmelo. He, you know, doesn't play defense, doesn't do this, doesn't do that. But Carmelo brought an atmosphere that wasn't with the New York organization for a very long time. And, you know, I'm not going to say that he is, you know, one of the greatest Knicks because, you know, there's a lot of people with different opinions, but he's definitely got to be top three to top five. And he just did something that nobody else wanted to do as a all-star, as a superstar wanting to come to New York. Nobody else wanted to do that. He made it known that he was going to do it through free agency if they didn't trade. So, you know, that's just my opinion on Carmelo. He brought a lot to New York that we haven't had in a long time. Even right now, you know, we don't have what we had when we look at Carmelo back in 2013. So,
sizzle. Right, Will? I was going to let you finish your point. I was just going to say you said. He brought what they don't have even right now. I said, right, sizzle, a star. Like, it's just there's something different when you've got that guy, that headline guy. And it was like you remember too, this was a big era, a star era. It was star-driven teams. It was just starting to become super teams. Like, this was still new back then. And so there was something about having that marquee name, that guy. And the Knicks, they had their chance to get one, and they went and got him. And that's who Melo was. At that time in the league, Melo was considered he was easily a top 10 player. At that time, like, let's not change history. When they got him, he was one of the top players in the league. Perennial all-star. You know, so they got themselves a guy at the very top. The problem is, as somebody pointed out on Twitter, problem is that when they got him, he was held to LeBron's standard. In fact, he's been held to LeBron's standard from the beginning. Two of them, they're connected all the way back to when they were kids playing against each other in high school. They've just always been linked. And Melo decided to go the college route. And LeBron was able to come right out. And, you know, again, famously, Detroit passes on him in the draft, which I'll always remind Bart of that. But it's like you held him to LeBron's standard. And it's like it's not like he's a different player. LeBron was never the scorer that Melo was. He became a great scorer. But you know, 10 years ago, LeBron even looked at Melo like, yo, like that, I wish I had his, you know, his footwork, his game, whatever it was. But Melo wasn't a playmaker. Let's not get that twisted. Nobody's ever going to call him a playmaker. He's a great scorer. So for those who want to do it, all-time great players to ever play for the Knicks, And I mean legit play, not like, you know, Tracy McGrady at the end of his career doesn't really count, right? T-Mac was a great player. But when he's a Nick, he was at the end. But I'm just saying, when you think about Melo and his ability, don't look at the I'm not talking about wins, just individually basketball player. Melo is one of the best players ever played for the Knicks. It's undoubtable. Like, you can't dispute that. He's ninth all-time in scoring, but he's seventh all-time on the Knicks' scoring record. So you got to at least acknowledge one of the best talents this franchise has ever seen. It's fair to say. Now, the debate will rage on forever about what kind of impact he had and his career as a Knick and all that stuff. And I understand it because that's what fans have done since he was traded here. It's just been a thing. But he retired today, and he retires as an all-time great, whether you like it or not, an all-time great. So we just decided to spend a little time and celebrate that.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays at noon on 98.7 ESPN.